So then they can lie about the next election and try to interfere in a lot of different ways.
And then can you talk about the voting rolls of Minnesota?
Yeah, so what the Justice Department is trying to do is they're trying to get the voter rolls, not just of Minnesota, but of 24 states overall. And they want this data so they can have the first ever national database of all registered voters in the country. And that has a lot of problems with it. There's privacy problems. You're talking about sensitive information like driver's license, social security numbers, party history. There's security risks. It's a lot easier to hack.
15 seconds, Ari.
It's a lot easier to hack a massive database. But ultimately, what they want to do is they want to lie about voter fraud, remove people from the rolls, and challenge election outcomes. And the attempt to take voter rolls is just a larger part of Trump's scheme to try to rig the midterms.
Trump supports states' rights, except when it comes to voting rights. Ari Berman, voting
yeah, exactly.
rights correspondent
he supports
for
states'
Mother
rights,
Jones
except when
Magazine.
He's trying to take
we'll
over.
Link to your article. That does it for our show. I'll be in Santa Barbara this weekend for the International Film Festival. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
This is Norman Solomon saying that you're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored, volunteer-driven community radio, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM.
Hello, KBOO supporters. It's tax season. To request a copy of your 2025 tax receipt, email membership at kboo.org or call at 971-801-1381. That's 971-801-1381 for your 2025 tax receipt. Thank you.
Hi, this is Melissa Lesniak, the creator and host of That Vegan Show. On That Vegan Show, you will hear in-depth guest interviews on vegan-related topics, such as companion animals, environmentalism, social issues, and food and nutrition. We also learn about specific animals such as possums and rabbits, including their needs and ways to help them. Be sure to tune in to That Vegan Show on the fourth Friday of the month at 11 a.m. right here on KBOO Portland.
It's the month of love, so let's celebrate the love of the blues and the legend Willie Mae Thornton, a.k.a. Big Mama Thornton. Tune in Friday, February 13th at 8 p.m. with me, Katie Zip, to rejoice in the power of Thornton's storied career, only on Double Groove, only on KBOO 90.7 FM.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up in the KBOO Evening News, federal immigration agents tear gas a peaceful rally at the South Waterfront in Portland.
A federal lawsuit asks a judge to limit ICE agents' use of chemical agents.
And Trump calls out anti-ICE protesters in Eugene.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, February 2nd, 2026. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Dave Johnson. Thousands of Oregon Union members rallied against ICE on Saturday in Portland's South Waterfront neighborhood. The Labor Against ICE rally was peaceful and attended by families and people of all ages. Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers shot multiple rounds of tear gas in quick succession at the marchers who were turning a corner near the ICE facility. The gas quickly swamped the surrounding blocks, and many found themselves without masks or eye protection, including children. Most marchers turned around. the chemical affecting the eyes, mouth, throat, lungs, and skin. Portland City Councilor Mitch Green was in the crowd and wrote on social media, quote, "I just got tear gassed along with thousands of union members, many of whom had their families with them. Federal agents at the ICE facility tear gassed children. We must abolish ICE, DHS, and we must have prosecutions," end quote. Mayor Keith Wilson condemned the gassing of nonviolent protesters. He wrote, quote, "To those who continue to work for ICE, resign. To those who control this facility, leave. Through your use of violence and the trampling of the Constitution, you have lost all legitimacy and replaced it with shame," end quote. He committed to enforcing a recent city code that fines detention facilities when they use chemical weapons.
ICE attacks on nonviolent Portland protesters led to the filing of several lawsuits over the weekend. At a hearing this morning, U.S. District Court Judge Michael Simon said he expected to rule tomorrow on whether to grant a temporary restraining order curbing when federal officers may use force outside the Portland ICE building. Protesters suing the federal government say the government's violence at the ICE building in South Waterfront shows the need to limit officers from using excessive force on nonviolent demonstrators. Portland police are already banned from using chemical weapons like tear gas. On Sunday afternoon, hundreds rallied outside City Hall demanding leaders revoke ICE's permit to operate at the South Portland facility. Protesters then marched to the ICE building, where federal officers again deployed large clouds of chemical munitions on the crowd. Both weekend incidences were cited in legal filings submitted Sunday night by the ACLU. They described the tear gassing as a, quote, "pattern of retaliatory force." During a hearing last week, Simon did not rule out a temporary restraining order, but he did say he wanted lawyers for the protesters and government to try to work out some kind of short-term agreement without a court order. U.S. Customs and Border Protection's Gregory Bovino previously noted that Border Patrol's use of force polices require federal officers to give a verbal warning when possible and to allow this time to comply before using force. But several people who attended this Saturday said in sworn declarations they did not hear any warnings from federal officers before tear gas was deployed. Others who attended the rally said they did not witness any protesters posing a threat.
The weekend of ICE protests in Portland followed Friday's nationwide shutdown, where hundreds of students demonstrated. People called off work and closed businesses in protest of Trump's deportation policies and the killings of observers. In Eugene, demonstrators protested outside the federal building on Friday, starting at noon. By 6 o'clock, police declared the protest a riot, and they say some protesters went inside the building. President Trump responded to the Eugene protest on Truth Social, calling the protesters, quote, "highly paid lunatics, agitators, and insurrectionists." He wrote that the military would be called out to protect federal property, quote, "if necessary." Eugene Mayor Karen Knudsen called the president's message, quote, "an incredibly strange communication." Oregon Governor Tina Kotek promised to protect Oregonians' rights to protest and called on Trump to stop aggressive ICE enforcement until the federal agents' killings of Renee Good and Alex Preddy are investigated. Kotek told reporters at a press conference, quote, "Oregon will not be intimidated."
Educators and media professionals who promote responsible journalism acknowledge audiences might feel fatigued with social media posts about a sea of current events, including the federal immigration enforcement crisis in Minnesota. A local expert says, even though it feels overwhelming at times, news consumers are doing themselves and their communities a favor by seeking out reliable sources. Mike Moen reports.
The federal immigration crackdown in Minnesota and the increasing national backlash against it produces a nonstop flow of news and social media posts. A journalism expert hopes news consumers do their part in letting the facts win the day. Bystanders recording controversial ICE enforcement in Minnesota has allowed the public to disseminate what happened and compare visual evidence with information argued by the Trump administration. Alicia Cohn directs the Hubbard School of Journalism at the University of Minnesota. Speaking on her own accord, she also points to many news organizations that are quickly fact-checking arrest data and details cited by federal officials. While it may be an onslaught of information everywhere, she says social media users have to do some vetting too.
We have to make sure that we're not simply buying into what is served up to us, what some people might refer to as the daily me, the daily things that I believe and kind of already think about.
Cohen says a person still needs to compare their daily dose of information with multiple sources deemed trustworthy. Other tips include looking over a source's webpage for their ethical standards. She says we're at a time where trust in both elected officials and the media is pretty low. But she adds independent news organizations and outlets still take steps to validate a story and not just post a quick online analysis. Experts say it's getting harder to fight misinformation, with social media algorithms increasingly steering people into so-called echo chambers through false and emotionally charged content along with AI images. Watchdogs have also called out the White House for some of these practices. Cohen says people shouldn't feel they have to accept this is the only way information is circulated and processed.
Democracy requires work, and that is the work of becoming more knowledgeable, reviewing facts, making and holding, you know, informed opinions.
Cohen joins the list of journalism voices expressing great concern about the Trump administration arresting reporters who documented an anti-ICE protest at a Twin Cities church. The White House accuses the reporters of taking part in an effort to disrupt prayer services, but Cohen says the public loses out if journalists are intimidated from reporting on these events.
We have less information, less ability to document and verify and search for and ultimately obtain the truth and hold officials accountable.
This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection.
A new report argues Oregonians would benefit from shifting the prevalent at-will employment standard to a just cause model, which would prevent workers from being fired without reason. The report contends the current standard weakens labor rights, undermines discrimination protections, and can compromise safety. Isabel Charlet has the details.
Oregonians would be better off if more people were employed with a just cause standard instead of the prevailing at-will employment standard, according to a new report. More than three quarters of Oregon employees are classified as at-will workers, meaning a company can let them go for almost any reason or no reason at all. Kathy Lara with the Oregon Center for Public Policy authored the report. She believes at-will employment weakens labor rights, undermines protections against workplace discrimination, and can compromise safety standards.
The research also shows that workers then tend to accept unhealthy and hazardous workplace conditions in order to not experience those unfair firing. They might deal with management hostility because of it. They might accept wage theft because they don't want to be unjustly fired.
Lara notes that even with anti-discrimination laws, the burden falls on workers to prove bias. This is harder to do when employers can fire someone freely. She says a just cause law would require documented, legitimate reasons for firings, provide guidelines for progressive discipline, and include strong anti-retaliation protections for workers. Lara explains union workers and public sector workers already have just cause employment in Oregon, as well as many CEOs and other high-level positions. She adds heads of companies generally have contracts that guarantee they will at least receive notice before they are fired and often get a severance package.
These high-level employees, they understand that without a contract, their positions are precarious. And so I think that should also be applied to the everyday person as well, who's working retail, a bus driver, gas station attendants, what have you.
The report finds sudden firings force workers to drain savings, go into debt, and struggle to afford basics like food and childcare. Lara argues a just cause law would provide greater economic stability. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service.
House Minority Leader Jeffries denounces the arrest of journalist Don Lemon. Legal scholars say First Amendment freedoms are being curtailed under Trump. and financier Kevin Warsh will be nominated as the next Federal Reserve Chair. With that story and more, it's Edward J. Vieira with the 2026 Talks.
Welcome to 2026 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The Trump administration has systematically targeted the free and fair press because they want to intimidate America and oppose anyone who is not willing to bend the knee to their extremism.
House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries is criticizing Homeland Security for arresting Don Lemon. The former CNN anchor was charged with conspiracy and violating First Amendment freedom of religion by interviewing protesters who disrupted a Minnesota church service led by an ICE official. President Donald Trump says, quote, "The arrest is the best thing to ever happen to Lemon." Many Republicans say the arrest is justified to protect free exercise of faith, but the administration has been using law enforcement to attack the media. Last month, the FBI raided the home of a Washington Post reporter in contact with a defense contractor who was charged with sharing classified information. It is not by itself against the law to print classified information, and the Committee to Protect Journalists calls the case a signal America is shifting from democracy to authoritarianism. Smartphone footage has been central to exposing what happened during the shootings of Renee Good and Alex Preddy in Minnesota, but some elected officials warned bystanders could now be arrested for videoing federal immigration actions. University of Illinois law professor Stephen Schwinn says that's typically been a protected activity, but people can't obstruct officers. And he says the administration is trying to redefine what constitutes interference to include nearly anyone who records the police.
The administration is moving in that direction to chill and discourage people from recording federal officers, and I think there is more and more concern about what are the extent of our First Amendment freedoms.
Trump says he'll nominate Kevin Warsh to be the next Federal Reserve Chairman as the president continues to try to force current bank leadership to dramatically cut interest rates. Warsh was on the Fed for 5 years under former President George W. Bush. Speaking at the 2025 Reagan National Economic Forum, he said a central bank's independence is vital to an economy.
I think the economy is better off if the world perceives, markets perceive, members of Congress perceive. You got central banks that are calling it the best they see it.
But he notes this doesn't make the Fed immune to criticism. The market signaled some confidence in the choice of Warsh, who is well known on Wall Street, but observers say it's far from clear how much leverage Trump would have over him. Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says the Senate shouldn't consider the nomination until Trump ends his, quote, vendetta against the central bank and its current chairman.
So I'd simply say this about Mr. Warsh. Donald Trump is trying to cannibalize the Federal Reserve to eliminate its independence. And Mr. Warsh has an obligation to ensure that does not happen.
Meanwhile, Trump says the Kennedy Center is closing for renovations until 2028. Its final day open would be July 4th, aligning with the nation's 250th anniversary. Numerous artists have canceled performances there since the president made himself the chairman of the center's board and renamed it the Trump Kennedy Center. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after the newscast for in-depth look at the community response to ISIS crackdown in Minneapolis with KBOO reporter on the ground, RC. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, stick around for Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with an overnight low of 42 degrees. Tomorrow, those clouds continue with a daytime high of roughly 58. Today in history, in 1887, Groundhog Day featured a rodent meteorologist, was celebrated for the first time in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. The quote of the day is from American cartoonist Ken Hubbard. He said, quote, "Don't knock the weather. 9/10 of the people couldn't start a conversation if it didn't change once in a while."
The U.S. Department of the Interior is facing a lawsuit from an Alaska tribe over their canceling a key substance program. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Leaders of the North Slope village of Nuiqsa sued the U.S. Department of Interior last week for canceling a key subsistence protection for a development project. Ayolna Naidem for the Alaska Desk reports.
About a year ago, the U.S. Bureau of Land Management issued an agreement with Nuiqsut leaders that prohibited oil and gas development around Teshekpuk Lake, which is located in the northeastern corner of the Natural Petroleum Reserve Alaska. The goal was to mitigate the harm that the ConocoPhillips Willow project would have on caribou, a crucial subsistence resource for Nuiqsut residents. But last month, the Department of the Interior, which oversees BLM, canceled that agreement, saying it was improperly issued in the first place. In turn, Nuiqsut's leadership filed a lawsuit in the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, arguing that the cancellation was illegal.
We're fighting to protect the area and think about the caribou.
George Tukaksailuk is the president of Nuiqsut's Kupik Corporation. He says the cancellation was disappointing and damaged the trust of Nuiqsut residents.
By pulling that right away off, I mean, it's just like they're throwing us away. I mean, not listening to the community.
Department of Interior officials declined to comment, citing the pending litigation. When BLM approved the controversial Willow project in 2023, one condition was mitigating the harm on Teshekpuk caribou herd. And BLM signed a right-of-way agreement with Nuiqsut to meet that condition. Silek says that Nuiqsut residents are careful when they consider development projects so close to their home. But the promise of additional protections for caribou helped more residents to get on board with Willow.
We will support development in our area as long as we kind of work together to balance such as what we're doing here with a right-of-way.
But the Department of Interior said that the federal law does not authorize such conservation measures. The department indicated that they expect to hold lease sales this winter, which may include the area around Teshekpuk Lake. Nuiqsut leadership says they might consider legal avenues to protect the area, but no decision has been made yet. In Anchorage, I am Alena Naidin.
A bipartisan bill on Capitol Hill is looking to turn one of Arizona's federal monuments into the state's fourth national park behind Socorro, the Petrified Forest, and the Grand Canyon. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio has details.
Established in 1924 by President Calvin Coolidge, Chiricahua National Monument is known by many as the wonderland of rocks. From Geronimo to Cochise, this land is also steeped in Apache history, something the San Carlos Apache tribe and neighboring Mescalero Apache tribe in New Mexico want to see permanently protected. The effort is being led by Democratic U.S. Senators Mark Kelly and Ruben Gallego, as well as Republican Representative Juan Ciscomani in the House. If passed, Arizona would tie fourth overall with Colorado, behind Utah, Alaska, and California for states with the most national parks. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio.
California tribes are gathering this week for the Missing and Murdered Indigenous People Tribal Policy Summit. The annual summit, in its fourth year, is expected to draw tribal leaders, lawmakers, advocates, and victims' families. The theme is Justice, Healing, Sovereignty, and Solutions to MMIP. Two proposed pieces of legislation will be discussed: a bill to establish a Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons Justice Program within the State Justice Department, and a bill to establish a tribal foster care prevention program to prevent Indigenous children from entering the child welfare system, which advocates say is a MMIP pathway. The event is taking place Tuesday and Wednesday at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, Sacramento. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Nationwide, Black women are facing a significant surge in unemployment as President Donald Trump continues to push back against diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. Some of those workers are now steering their professional knowledge and skill set in other direction to earn a living. Danielle Smith reports from Pennsylvania.
Thousands of Black women in Pennsylvania and nationwide are facing unemployment amid the Trump administration's push to eliminate diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. Data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics show the unemployment rate for Black women increased nearly 1.5% from January to December of last year. That includes thousands in federal roles laid off due to budget cuts. To cover living expenses, many of these workers must apply for full or partial government assistance. Employment attorney Shakita Hall Jackson believes economic uncertainty and job losses linked to Trump's orders have hit Black women the hardest.
The government is the number one employer of Black people, including Black women. If the government is controlled by this administration, especially for employment, and they come in and wiping out positions with buyouts, forced early retirements, and ultimately firing and targeting Black people in their roles, especially leadership roles, this is where we land.
Hall Jackson believes the mass layoffs ordered by Trump follows the tactics outlined in Project 2025, a conservative initiative that broadly promotes rolling back civil rights protections for women and eliminating DEI programs. She says in conversations with jobless Black women, she has learned they prefer not to seek government aid due to childhood poverty or their parents' opposition to seeking federal help. The rise of artificial intelligence is causing concern for people trying to re-enter the workforce. A Reuters Ipsos poll finds 71% of respondents are concerned AI could permanently put too many people out of work. If severance pay is included during a job exit, Black women should consider options outside of pursuing a career change, Hall Jackson suggests.
Invest that money into a startup, some kind of stock. Find what investment vehicle works for you so you can maximize that money in case that's an emergency.
Black women are increasingly using entrepreneurship to create income streams. A Wells Fargo 2025 report shows the number of Black women-owned businesses rose more than 7% throughout the year. The number of businesses owned by Black women increased by 33% between 2019 and 2023. For Keystone State News Connection, I'm Danielle Smith.
The U.S. Department of Agriculture is pausing releasing funds for manure digesters at large factory farms across the U.S. The digesters produce what proponents refer to as renewable natural gas, or RNG. But critics say they also encourage expansion of dairy farms along with the emissions they produce and generate less energy than solar arrays. Mark Richardson has more from Arkansas.
Groups that focus on the environment and small farms are praising a decision by the U.S. Department of Agriculture to pause and review funding for systems that produce natural gas from manure at industrial livestock operations. The move comes just a week after a coalition filed a petition asking that factory farms be ineligible for funding for anaerobic digesters under the Rural Energy for America program. The EPA database lists one anaerobic digester in Arkansas near Springdale. Heider LaBelle with Food and Water Watch says factory farm biogas digesters produce energy but carry high environmental costs.
They increase water and air pollution, and they encourage factory farms to get bigger, which increases overall pollution load that a rural community has to deal with. We are adding industrial gas production on top of these already very large and pretty industrialized facilities.
In a statement, the Renewable Natural Gas Coalition said the digesters reduce methane emissions from manure management, improve water and air quality, enable production of renewable natural gas, and support grid reliability. Liddell says limited program funds would be better spent on projects like solar arrays on small farms, which don't produce enough manure to merit a multi-million-dollar digester.
This type of gas production adds yet another market lever against small-scale local farming and in favor of multinational big ag corporations having further consolidation in our ag system.
There's also a prototype digester at the Arkansas Agricultural Experimental Station that transforms waste into fertilizer and captures methane. For Arkansas News Connection, I'm Mark Richardson.
Scientists measured the shaking of Lumen Field during several recent Seattle Seahawks games and found fans rattled the building more than recent earthquakes. Scientists say the experiments help seismologists practice with their equipment and engage the public with their work. Isabel Charlet has more.
This season, the Seattle Seahawks are sending shockwaves through the state, literally. Scientists set up seismographs at Lumen Field during recent playoff games to measure how hard fans shake the stadium during big plays. Harold Tobin of the Pacific Northwest Seismic Network, or PNSN, says the crowds did not disappoint. For comparison, he says during one of the games, there was a simultaneous earthquake about 11 miles away that was measured at magnitude 2.6.
And when we directly compare the shaking of that to the stadium shaking from the fans, there's
there's no comparison, actually. The earthquake is much, much smaller shaking. So stadium shook harder than a local nearby magnitude 2.6 earthquake.
PNSN says the experiments help give scientists practice using their equipment and analyzing the data, as fan enthusiasm is much more predictable than actual earthquakes. Tobin adds the experiments also help engage the public around their work as seismologists. Tobin says the Seahawk experiments give examples that are fun, but of course, real earthquakes aren't a game. He explains while Lumen Stadium is designed to withstand lots of shaking, many buildings in the region are not.
We certainly need all over Seattle and all over our entire region to work on retrofitting, repairing, replacing those dangerous older buildings.
Tobin says 25 years have passed since the Nisqually earthquake, the region's last major quake. The magnitude 6.8 tremor struck 30 miles south of Olympia, causing about 400 injuries and an estimated $4 billion in damage. He says the Seahawks experiments will hopefully get people thinking about earthquakes who might not otherwise.
Maybe this is just a small reminder that there's a seismic network out there that's paying attention. And otherwise, go Hawks.
I'm Isabel Charlet, Washington News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, February 2nd, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem, Hannah Francis, Anna Wilcox, and RC. The producer is Althea Billings and Nick Caperso, our engineer. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Edward J. Vieira, Antonio Gonzalez, Danielle Smith, Mark Richardson, and Mike Moen. The director of the evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Dave Johnson. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO.